You know, one of the reasons actually that Neil and I met was because of our common interest in politics. And there is so much talk about politics in Conversations with God, Part Two. You know, Raymond, when you mentioned Vaclav Havel, it seems very interesting to me that Americans are able to embrace a spiritually based political message if it comes from a
Yes.
non-American. Notice that.
That's
Vaclav Havel says it. We're all, oh, they're so fabulous. Nelson Mandela says it. Oh, it's oh, so fabulous. But if an American says it, we have to be really alert to this because I know I have had some really interesting experiences where I'll say something, be damned, like it's some woo-woo, new age, fuzzy statement. And then I will say, that's interesting you think it. Mahatma Gandhi said it or Martin Luther King Jr. said it. And the people are just, do you see what I'm
Yep.
saying?
Yes. As
So I
long as
think
they're
we
dead
really
or
have to
foreign,
make a
it's all
stand
right.
now. And I think Neil really leads the way with bringing these messages into the social and the political conversation in the United States and not letting them knock us down so easily.
Yeah. One of the things that our foundation is doing, and we are putting it together now for 1999, we're going to be putting together the International Symposium on the Integration of Spirituality and Governance. We hope that Vaclav Havel will be there, in fact, and Nelson Mandela and others as well. We hope that it will be a worldwide experience, not only taking place in one central location where the main symposium will occur, but also in hamlets and towns and villages and cities all over the world simultaneously, one weekend where spiritual and political leaders in every town, hamlet, and city on the globe will sit down at the same time and talk about ways that we can take our highest commonly held spiritual values and overlay them upon our systems of governance so that we do ask the right questions at last.
I tell you, Neil, just your saying it makes me feel really excited.
Now, Marianne, a play off of what you were saying about not respecting those who speak of the spirit. If they're American, I'm thinking of Jimmy Carter, who appears to be more respected outside of the United States
Precisely.
for who he is than he is inside the United States.
Or I think also, in addition to that, we like it when he says it as long as he's not in political power anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's really kind of what I mean. We really want this talk, but we don't want it in our leaders. And until we're willing to make that shift, that it's not just an ex-American leader and a South African leader or a Czechoslovakian leader or a Polish leader, but that it's actually an American leader saying it.
You see, the best thing Jimmy Carter did was to get out of office. And as long as he was in the White House, he was terribly ineffective, even when he did extraordinary things like he did with Sadat and Begin, extraordinary things and produced a miracle. People said, well, it was the wrong thing and he didn't do it right. And he was criticized roundly. An extraordinary mirror, just as Marianne points out.
But you know, Neil, I have some questions about that that I wonder. I know on one hand, he was rejected because in the United States, we're still tied to this Rambo image of strength.
Yeah.
And we are more concerned about the Rambo image of strength than we are than the fact that the hostages came home alive. I understand all that. But there is another thing that I keep thinking, and of course, there is no absolute answer to this, but about Jimmy Carter. It seems to me that when Jimmy Carter ran for president, he made it very clear how important God was to him. People voted for him. The country basically said, go in there with all your faith context. We'll go for it. But when he got to Washington, he stopped explaining the larger faith-based context. And I think that made him lose people more than the actions. I think sometimes the conservatives, obviously in America, need to walk their talk. But I think sometimes people with the most progressive vision need to talk their walk. And I think that Carter, perhaps, and once again, there's no absolute answer to this, but it occurs to me that if perhaps he had let us in a little more on his thinking, particularly the spiritual aspects to it, as he does so freely now, he might not have lost the nation quite the way he did.
That's an extraordinary insight. I hadn't thought about it until you just said it, and I think I agree with you. I think it's absolutely true that he stopped talking about that aspect of the decision-making process because I think he felt that the system required him to. I think he had advisors saying, for heaven's sake, Jimmy, don't for what the last thing you're going to go out there and do is say, I'm taking this action because it's right, because it's spiritually and correct, and because it's the higher consciousness righteousness thing to do.
But it's interesting because we voted for him. Basically, to me, America's vote for him as president was saying, we know you're going to do that and we're okay with it.
Yeah. I think it's universally true now that you bring it up. I noticed that it's universally true, or at least I observe it's true. We expect the highest ideas and the most grandiose concepts from all of our politicians when they're running for office. And when they get into office, we really make it difficult for them to actualize those. That's happened to more people than Jimmy Carter.
Well, I heard President Clinton once say that Mario Cuomo said that we campaign in poetry and govern in prose. Mm. And when the president said that, my comment was, yeah, well, Mario Cuomo lost. Now, if you look at someone like Ronald Reagan, he campaigned in poetry and he governed in poetry. I think that the mistake is when you begin governing in prose. Vaclav Havel governs in poetry, as does Nelson Mandela in many ways.
Yes. And although folks may not want to hear me say this, Mikhail Gorbachev.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry to say that in our society, I fear, hope this isn't a cynical remark, but it's just an observation that what we seem to be going through now in our society is a fad of in which anyone who is in public office or in the public eye is going to be subjected to this character assassination business. And, you know, I think about the current difficulties of Mr. and Mrs. Clinton. Anyone I know in our socioeconomic group who's essentially ignorant about money and don't know about investments, I mean, I bet you that anybody that I know, if this huge government agency was charged with finding something you did in the past, that we'd all be in jail.
Of course, and that's why nobody in America cares about it.
That's right.
That's why he got reelected and nobody cares. The only people who cares are the media and his opposition. Everybody else is going, what's
that's
the problem?
That's right. And so the ethos now is that what we do is that we have these public executions. We don't do it anymore like the Romans did in the arena, but we very publicly assassinate someone's character over a period of time. And it's astonishing to me that the Clintons are even walking around on 2 feet with this kind of...
Yet, even as we have spoken in these past few moments of all the things that are not going well in our country, part of me wants to make sure we don't conclude our visit without saying something about what is really hopeful and presents a new vision for tomorrow, because that's really where we need to focus our energy and focus our commentary and focus our thoughts. It's about the morrow. It's about tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow and the role we choose to play in creating the tomorrow of which we all dream and of which we know we are all capable.
There's a line in The Course in Miracles that says, look at the crucifixion, but do not dwell on it. I think that Neil is correct that we must not dwell on these things, but we must look at these things.
See, the beauty of Conversations with God, Book 2, is that it does both. It lays out the problem, but it also says, okay, folks, here is the vision. Here is the hope. Here is the way. And we as individuals need to do and say the same thing. We need to have the courage to stand up, each of us individually, and say to our families, to our communities, even to our nation, if we dare to, here is the problem, and here is the vision, and here is the hope, and here is the way. Bobby Kennedy had an enormously important thing to say, which I've carried with me all of my life. He said that some people look at things the way they are and ask why. I look at things the way they could be, and I ask why not.
It's interesting that you mentioned Bobby Kennedy because he's basically the last white liberal that really spoke in a moral context. And he's also the last white liberal that really had a piece of America's heart. So I think that there's something there about our being willing to speak politically and more specifically and practically about the conditions of the country and the world and not being afraid of doing so in a spiritual or moral context.
People think that they are powerless to provide a solution, to provide a vision. I'm here to tell you that that is not what's so, and I hope that every single person who is listening to this dialogue right now will renew their own determination to play the largest role they ever imagined they could or would play in creating and sustaining and empowering and energizing a new vision for the life of all of us. If that isn't what happens as a result of this dialogue, as a result of these books, then it's just the latest hot read, and that's just my 15 minutes in the sun, and it's got to be more than that. It's got to be more than that, or it means nothing.
The tools are there, I think, for a genuine revolution.